your host, Dmitry Filipovich.
Welcome to the Hockey PDO Cast. My name is Dmitry Filipovich, and joining me is my good buddy Jack Hahn. Jack, what's going on, man?
We're narrowing down here, right? Last night there was no game to watch, so that was a bit unusual, but we're settling into maybe a more deliberate rhythm here.
Yeah, there's no game tonight either on Wednesday night, which is upsetting. But after that, there's going to be one fun, meaningful game every single night for the next couple of weeks. And so that is really exciting. You and I are going to do our big conference finals preview here today. I had to have you back on for this one after we did the round one previews together. People really enjoyed those, seemed to get quite a bit out of our chat. I did as well. So hopefully we'll be able to kind of dig up some thought-provoking stuff here as well. And as you mentioned, there's only two matchups left. So we have more time to really sink our teeth into these ones and cover everything rather than just sort of rushing through it and only doing kind of superficial surface stuff. So we're going to do key matchups, strengths and weaknesses, kind of what to keep an eye out for fans when they're watching these games. And let's get right into it. Let's do Hurricanes Panthers to start off. And I think this is for all the talk about how, this is a worst case scenario for the NHL from a marketing perspective and fan bases and not having enough appeal. I think it's very easy to position it as one of the best offensive teams in the league in the Panthers versus one of the best defensive teams in the league in the Hurricanes. And especially what's interesting to me is I think they both kind of want to get to the same endpoint in the sense that, you know, they want to create chaos. They want to live in that chaos and then they want to benefit from it. But they go about it in completely different ways in terms of how they get there. And so I think that's a good entry point here for us to talk about this series in terms of how they want to accomplish that and kind of how these two teams match up against each other.
Yeah. Two teams that are similar in some ways, but polar opposite in others. But yeah.
Well, okay, let's start with this. How good this Canes defense has been in particular, right? Because especially in round two against New Jersey now, I think the Devils heading into that series, you know, that the round one matchup against the Rangers was kind of the Super Bowl for them, right? With the rivalry, and it went seven games and they sort of emptied the tank, I think both physically and mentally in that one. And then they entered this series against the Hurricanes and just got completely blitzed and swarmed by them. But to the Hurricanes' credit, in four out of those five games, essentially, they just shut the taps off completely offensively for the Devils. They didn't really allow them to do anything they wanted to do. The Devils finally adjusted a bit in game five and started kind of playing more of a Carolina Hurricanes type of game, ironically, in terms of just like getting the puck in, chasing after it, trying to throw it on net and work the tips and deflections. And it almost won them that game. And maybe if they had made that adjustment earlier in the series, it would have been a longer one. But obviously, that's not how the Devils wanted to play. And credit to the Hurricanes for forcing them into that type of dilemma. And for the series, they kept a team in the Devils that averaged 34.4 shots per game to just 26. And aside from that game three eruption where the Devils scored eight goals, they managed just five goals in four games. So I think that's going to be a key thing here, right? The Panthers, they're going to be more okay, I think, than not in playing a lower scoring game as we saw against the Leafs. Now, it'll rely on Bobrovsky to hold up the way he did in that matchup, but they want to get into some more higher scoring shootout type games. And I think creating those goals against this Hurricanes team is going to be quite a challenge because they've shown already that when they're humming and when they're buzzing defensively, they can be really, really difficult to kind of gain any sort of traction.
Yeah, like the thing about Carolina is over the years, we've seen them just sort of completely blitz teams and stifle them by playing this high pressure way of playing. But like against the Devils, we also saw that they're way more rounded. You know, they're just not like going to bum rush you every time. They can be patient and they can, you know, play in their zone a little bit and block shots and, you know, snuff out rush attacks and stuff like that. Because for me, like, I liked how the Devils played overall. I think they were true to their identity, which is, I think this time of year, it's difficult to do because, you know, you have a lot of time between games to kind of overthink things. But, you know, the Devils were true to their identity for most of the series. Carolina was definitely true to their identity. And it's ultimately just a team that's been doing it better for longer that prevailed. Mm. You know, like Carolina is still the favorite team going to Florida, obviously, again. But you know, they're ever since Brendan Moore took over, they've basically played the same style of game. And if you look at the last four teams standing, they're the team with the most continuity. And I think it kind of shows how difficult it is to have a team play a certain way under the same coach and with the same core for like 3 to 5 years, which if you look at the other teams, like they've made like really drastic changes the last 5 years, and Carolina's probably the only team that's really kept it together and just added around the margins.
Well, the two anchors defensively in that series, Jacob Slavin, also for the postseason in its entirety, including round one, the Hurricanes are up 15-3 in his 5-on-5 minutes, and high danger chances are 62-39 in their favor. And him and Burns in particular, you know, you mentioned kind of snuffing out the rush game. You know, Slavin is one of the best zone entry defenders in the league, clearly, and Burns has been very aggressive himself, and they contest everything and don't really allow you to carry the puck in and do what you want off the rush ordinarily. And so that matchup, that defense pair has been phenomenal. And then you've got Jordan Staal out there, where he played 36-30 of his 60-57 in round two at 5-on-5 against Jack Hughes. And in those minutes, the Hurricanes won the shot battle 21-9, and they won the goal battle 3-0, and they just absolutely dominated and eliminated the Devils' kind of key source of offense throughout the regular season. And what was interesting to me in that in particular was we saw them enter the postseason with that kind of, you know, conventional checking unit of Staal, Martinuk, and Jesper Fast. And in that series, I think part of it was because they recognized that the Devils didn't just have one offensive line that you have to worry about. They had multiple different units. They kind of split them up, and they played Staal with Nages and Drury, and then they played Martinuk with Fast and Kotkaniemi. And obviously Martinuk kind of goes off offensively and scores a bunch of goals. I'm not sure you're relying on that. That's kind of found money at that point, but it'll set them up better, I think, for this series, because obviously the Panthers don't necessarily just have the one line that you have to worry about, right? They give you multiple different looks and different challenges amongst those lines. And so I'm kind of curious to see how these teams match up in that regard in terms of what the matchup game is, particularly in games one and two in Carolina, where Rod Brind'Amour does have last change.
So I just want to go back to the Devils series for a moment here, because it's one of the things that it is really tough to understand about the Hurricanes until you really kind of look at it, and then it becomes crystal clear, which is, you know, how is it that Carolina is so aggressive on the forecheck, but then they rarely get burned, right? Or it seems like they're always able to get numbers back. And it's really simple. So let's say, you know, game one against Florida, if you watch Carolina dump the puck in, and you know their F1 goes in hard on the forecheck, pretty conventional stuff. Their F2 is coming down the boards, but then their F3 is above the play. So what they're really trying to goad you into doing is setting the puck up the wall to beat their F1 and F2. So that's what most teams do. Like if you watch, you know, Toronto against Florida's forecheck, similar thing, right? Like teams are just rimming the puck up, trying to beat two or three players, and then worrying about the consequences later. So the thing with Carolina is once you beat the first two players with the rim, now you got to figure out a way to get off the wall and into the middle of the ice, right? Because if you still have possession at that point, you're still on the wall, and it's not really easy to create offense or to find a change of size or to find that middle support player. And what happens is that as soon as F1 and F2 for Carolina, they get bypassed, they're not wasting a second. They're just sprinting all out through the middle of the ice, because they know that the following play is going to be some sort of a lateral play back into the middle, and they want to be there to cut it off. So it's like they go in hard, but as soon as they get beat, they turn one eight, they make a 180, and then they sprint the other way so that they arrive just in time, seemingly, for that next play. You know, for some teams, like it's an effort and it's a timing thing, but Carolina's the best in the league probably at doing it. And a lot of other teams, they're just not quite as diligent or not quite as quick at recovering defensively. And that's when they get exploited off the rush. Whereas for Carolina, a lot of times their players are able to get back. And, you know, it's probably a mix of coaching, and player acquisition strategy to target those players who are good enough skaters, well conditioned enough, and have that kind of high work rate to come back. So when you have all four lines doing that, it makes it really difficult to play against, because then you're forcing your opponents to take, you know, more and more risks until they turn it over, and then all of a sudden, you know, you have like a half ice counterattack, which that's the only way that Carolina can score off the rush, essentially.
Yeah, and it's difficult because you can beat them, but it requires like a string of successful plays, and generally one of those will fall apart. Someone will mess up, the puck will bounce on you, and then they'll capitalize on that. Now the Panthers, I think, in hearing you talk about that, I think Matthew Tkachuk might be the best player in the league right now at making that play, opt to get off the wall and get it into the middle of the ice in the neutral zone. They've got others like Sam Reinhart is really good at it as well. Carter Verhaeghe can do it too, more so skating it himself rather than passing it. But they have the pieces, I think, to deal with that part of it. But I'm curious to see how their defensemen deal with the first part of that chain, because I couldn't believe how the Leafs let the Panthers defensemen off the hook in this regard, because you watch, and I think Mark Stahl and Aaron Ekblad really, really struggle with any speed coming at them and can be pressured into really bad mistakes. And they limited that against the Leafs. They weren't pressured nearly enough. And when they were, they would kind of crumble in that way. Now Ekblad, I think, recovers a little bit better after that initial mistake than Stahl does. But I think they can be had in that regard. And I'm kind of curious to see how they're going to be able to deal with that first layer of speed that the Hurricanes throw at them.
Yeah, and you know, the one guy you haven't mentioned is Brandon Montour, who I think is probably their most important player in transition, because he's going to be fourth in the rush, and he might be the only defenseman, maybe aside from Forsling, who's going to consistently be a threat offensively in transition. So, you know, if Carolina really wants to make his life difficult and hit him 5 to 10 times a game, you know, after 3 or 4 games, like, that's going to start to show.
Yeah, definitely. Well, okay, so back to my point about the defensive assignments here, though. I want your take on this. I think the conventional wisdom would say, if you're the Hurricanes and you're kind of trying to map this out, you want to go with that Jordan Staal versus Matthew Tkachuk matchup, just because it feels like he's the most well-equipped to handle the physicality demands of that line. And they certainly, when they're humming, they can be really dominant at 5-on-5 and totally tilt the ice in Florida's favor. In thinking about it more, though, I do wonder whether there should be an added priority placed on trying to find ways to slow Carter Verhaeghe down a little bit, because not only does he just have an unbelievable amount of dog in him, but it feels like when he's going, he is such a game changer for this Panthers team. In Game 5 against Toronto, where for a large part of that game, they scored a couple goals and they kind of struggled to create anything offensively, he finished that one with 16 5-on-5 shot contributions in terms of shots he took himself and ones he set up. And so I wonder whether it's as simple as you throw Staal on Tkachuk when you can, and then you throw that Slabin and Burns pairing out there whenever you can against Verhaeghe, because they're so good at slowing down the rush, and that's where Verhaeghe's going to want to do a lot of his damage.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, because like Tkachuk, if you watch him, he's not as dynamic as a puck carrier as Verhaeghe is. He's more about getting off the wall and winning these small battles and kind of, you know, taking advantage of these counterattack opportunities, whereas Verhaeghe really has that ability to carry through a couple of people. And also, he's playing with Duclair. And for me, it's like Duclair is almost like a less good version of Verhaeghe, where he has that kind of high-end skill and he can really make you pay off the entry. So for sure, I would be more of the mind that I want my best rush defenders against that line, and then maybe have, as you said, Jordan Staal against Tkachuk, and maybe have, you know, have this duel of Rakko Gudas against Matthew Tkachuk, because, you know, Gudas, you never know what to expect with him. You always have to keep your head up when he's on the ice. He's probably the player who's got the least respect for the rule book, if you've looked at his body of work over the years. So for me, like he's a player that's really useful, because he has that intimidation factor, and I think, you know, he can really get under Tkachuk's skin. He might be one of the few players who can do that.
Well, yeah, I, you know, the funny thing about Gudas is, like, The joke used to be, you got to watch your head around him, right? Because he's coming after you. But now, apparently, after the Leaf series, you also got to watch your stick because he might grab it and prevent you from defending with it. So, certainly pulling out all sorts of tricks out of his book. I think here's my question for you though, with a series that I think is gonna get to a lot of how these games are played. If you're the Panthers, I feel like you have to play very aggressively because it's your MO, right? I think in that Leafs series, there were two times I remember where I felt they really got into trouble and the Leafs were clearly the better team. And they were in the back half of game two, and then for a large stretch of game five. And both those scenarios happened when the Panthers went out to kind of an early lead and then were holding on to it and totally changed the way they played. They started playing much more conservatively. If you go back and watch those games, they essentially just started dumping and changing. And then instead of going after the puck and aggressively forechecking, they would just sit back in a defensive posture and kind of try to hang on. And a lot of teams do that. That's what we call score effects, right? You certainly change the way you play depending on the score. But for them, they can't really get away with it because part of what makes them special and effective is how aggressively they attack you consistently. And so in this series, I'm curious to see whether they're able to do that and whether they're able to hang with the Hurricanes from kind of like a motor and relentlessness perspective, because we know what we're going to get from the Hurricanes in that regard, regardless of what's happening in the game. And that's going to be a big litmus test for me, I guess, how the Panthers can sort of keep up there and whether they can match that energy of Carolina's.
Yeah, and having watched Florida quite a bit in the playoffs, like I find that they have three forward lines that work really well. I think that Reinhart, Lussorinen, and Lundell line works really well together. So, maybe if there is a matchup that Florida can win, it's kind of in that third line. They can maybe create a bit more offense or at least control the run of play, because if you look elsewhere in the roster, maybe individually you'll see Verhaeghe and Tkachuk make some plays, but unless Flora's on the front foot, it's going to be really difficult for them, because Ekblad and Forsling have really struggled moving the puck. So if they let Carolina's best players in their zone and they start buzzing and they start changing the O zone and controlling the momentum of play, it's going to be really difficult for Florida to kind of recover from that. So for sure, they got to try to get on the front foot early in the series, and maybe they got to regroup if they're completely unable to do that, and then try to just kind of park the bus and shut things down and survive. But certainly, early on, I'm looking for them to make a push and
No.
see if they can get under kind of get into the Hurricanes' heads a little bit.
Yeah, I think they need to. I don't think they can get away with parking the bus here. I think that would lead to a disaster for them. But the Leafs were never really able to make them pay for the times they would get aggressive, right? Like you I sometimes they would get deep in the offensive zone, and then the Leafs would be able to get past that pinching defenseman trying to keep the puck in and extend the offensive zone possession, or the aggressive forecheck. They would get it into the neutral zone and they would get rush opportunities and odd man rushes. They weren't able to capitalize on them. But I imagine still for Paul Maurice and the Panthers, it was a bit of an unnerving experience to see all of these 2-on-1s and 3-on-2s and potential opportunities for the Leafs. In this series, though, like, listen, if Jordan Martinook is going to keep coming in on breaks and picking top corner and sniping and scoring and beat you that way, you just have to just accept it and be like, all right, well, we lost, but we can live with losing that way. But otherwise, like, playing conservatively is something I would not be able to live with either of them. And I guess what I'm trying to say is I think they're almost incentivized because of the Hurricanes lineup and sort of our perception of what the quality of their forwards is like compared to a team like the Leafs, to take more risks in the offensive zone and live with potential rush opportunities for the Hurricanes because they don't have the same firepower, and that's not even what they necessarily want to do themselves. If they get out in transition, they will attack. It's not like they're going to dump it in on a 2-on-1 and go for a change. But I feel like you're kind of a bit less worried about the ramifications of what will happen if that's the case compared to what you might have felt like in the previous matchup, if you know what I mean.
The one thing I would look for from Florida as a forechecking adjustment is, against the Leafs, they sent in three players pretty aggressively. And against Carolina, I'm looking for them to actually keep their third player a little bit higher up on the ice, a little bit more passive, just because against a team like Carolina, there's no real point in sending in three players, because what Carolina likes to do is they like to use the high flip, or they like to go glass and out, or they like to kind of just shoot the puck up the strong side. So, you know, either way, like if you send in three, you're going to get beat. If you only send in two, at least you have a chance to have your third player jump on that loose puck and turn on it. So, you know, I think there's no problem for me if Florida's F1 and F2 still pressure aggressively, which they should, but I would expect them to forecheck a little bit more like Tampa does. So Tampa uses like a 2-3 forecheck where that third forward is really, really passive and he's almost like playing defense. So I don't think Florida is going to go to that necessarily, but you're going to see that third player be a little bit higher, because the thing to do against Carolina's forecheck is just send in two by all means, but the third player stays high so that they're in a position to kind of make a play on that high flip when it lands.
But isn't it much about isn't it a bit of a lesser consideration for the Panthers in terms of that F3 as opposed to like what they're doing with their defensemen in some of these offensive zone situations, right? With like how aggressively they're sending them, because like you often see a guy like Montour will find himself getting super deep and trying to kind of, you know, cause another 50-50 battle or help keep the puck in the offensive zone. I think that's what I'm referring to more so than sort of the pure forechecking situations in terms of when you're in the offensive zone, you've already had a bit of a shift there, like how aggressively and how deep you're sending your guys to try and keep it there, as opposed to, you know, kind of playing more conservatively and worrying about what happens if that high flip happens and if Carolina can get out and transition themselves.
So it's again, if you know, F1 goes in hard, no problem. F2 goes in hard, no problem. If let's say Carolina rims the puck up the wall, defenseman pinches down. And then, but then what you're counting on is for F1 and F2 to really haul ass
Right.
and come back through the middle of the ice, because that puck is going to be kind of contested. And if you can get three players back early, then you have an opportunity to counterattack and not give up any odd man rushes. So it's kind of like taking a page out of Carolina's playbook, actually from kind of both a breakout and a forecheck point of view. These are two teams of really, really similar philosophies. And one of the funny things I've noticed over the years, you know, working at the NHL and AHL level, is that if you look at a team's forecheck and their breakout, they're oftentimes that team itself is really well equipped to counter whatever it's trying to do. So, for instance, you know, Carolina, you know, super aggressive forecheck. What do you do against that? Well, you can just flip the puck out and bypass with an aerial, and that's exactly what they do on the breakout. Same thing with Florida, right? Super aggressive forecheck. Super simple puck plays off the glass or high flips or just like a direct pass up the strong side. So it's like if you're pre-scouting a team and you're wondering what to do against their forecheck, look at their breakout. Maybe you'll get an idea, and vice versa.
Well, part of what's tricky about this matchup for me in terms of like from the Panthers' perspective is I think when they're at their best or most dangerous, it is when the other team is handling the puck a lot, because they can then it just inherently gives them more opportunities to, if you're handling the puck, it gives them a chance to force you into making a bad player a turnover. And they're so good, they've shown how opportunistic they are at turning those into high quality scoring chances immediately and a lot of goals as well throughout this postseason. And they also benefit from chaos. So I think maybe that'll counter this a little bit, but the Hurricanes handle the puck less than pretty much any other team in the league, other than maybe, I guess, the Islanders, right? Like they're not going to have the puck on their stick and try to make a high skill play that often. They're going to try to just kind of keep it moving quick. Like as soon as someone gets it, they throw it north and then go after it. And so it'll, I think there's going to be fewer opportunities for the Panthers to create those turnovers unless they are able to benefit from some of these loose pucks and kind of crazy bounces. So I'm not sure how much of an issue you think that is, but like against the Leafs, I thought the Leafs should have deferred a bit more themselves and not necessarily been playing with the puck as much as they did, because it winds up looking good on all of the shot metrics and everything. but it's also kind of plays into what the Panthers want. When the Panthers get in trouble, especially in the regular season, was these games where they would be dominating the puck and you'd look up and it'd be like, okay, the shots are 45-20 for Florida, but they're down 4-2. And it's because they get frustrated, they get over aggressive, they make a few mistakes themselves, and then they wind up being burned for it. And so like how much the other team handles the puck, I think, dictates their success. And in this case, I think that's why Carolina is a bit of a tricky matchup for them.
Well, Carolina is just a better team, right? Like you would, whether you look at the models, whether you look at regular season results, Carolina should win the series. They are the favorite team. So in terms of way of playing, like the only way that I see this series turning against Carolina is either, you know, goaltending, you know, something strange happens with the goalies, whether it's Freddie Anderson and Antti Raanta really struggling, or Bobrovsky being even better than last round, somehow Carolina ends up playing a lot with the puck and they don't know what to do with themselves. So those are for me the two scenarios where things can turn against Carolina, but otherwise it's their series to lose.
Yeah. Well, a few other notes here I had quickly before we go to break and then switch to the other series. Speaking of Bobrovsky, I made this point on a show earlier this week, but you know, a lot was made, and certainly he had a phenomenal save percentage and was clearly the best goalie in that series. But I think his impact was a bit overstated because a lot of the public models had him somewhere between like 7.5 and 9.5 goal save above expected in those five games. And so I looked into it with Sportlogic, and they had him at 3.9 for the series. And I think that discrepancy is explained by the fact that it felt like while the Leafs were getting a lot of sort of desirable or good looking shots from a rush perspective and from in tight, a lot of it was very sort of straight line, right? Like there wasn't a lot of east west in their game. They were kind of simplifying it to the point where Bobrovsky, because he was playing well, was very confident and was kind of just like jumping out and contesting a lot of these aggressively and cutting down the angle on it. And that's going to be more of the same here. Like the Hurricanes are not going to be trying to beat him with a lot of fancy east-west passes. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see if he can keep playing well in this series. Now, I wouldn't expect him to have a 940 save percentage or whatever he had in round two, but that's just an interesting thing to note. And then on the other end, I used to be worried about Florida's ability to defend in front of their own net, especially like as much as I love a guy like Gus Forsling, I think that is one weakness he can have and one way he can be beaten. But against Toronto, they cleared up in front of their net really well. They didn't give the Leafs any rebound opportunities really. And that's going to be tested highly in this series because the Hurricanes exclusively try to shoot from the point and then work the rebounds and get closer to their net that way. And so that'll be tested here even more so than it was in round two.
Well, it's not even just shooting from the point. Like Carolina just shoots from everywhere, right? Like the one thing that I think really hurt Toronto was they had to be really selective with their shooting because they weren't able to recover pucks as well as Florida did, right? You know, their players, I don't know, maybe they're a little bit slower, but certainly either off the forecheck or off ozone retrievals, I don't think they were as good as they could have been, or certainly as good as Carolina is. And if you remember that William Nylander goal that sent game five to overtime, he comes down the wing and he just sort of, he pretends that he was going to go around the back of the net. And then he just sort of takes a shot from there and he catches Bobrovsky kind of stuck between, you know, his butterfly and his post position. And it kind of goes in. Like it wasn't even like the whole net was open essentially. Like it wasn't even kind of, he picked a corner. And Carolina is going to challenge you with those kinds of shots constantly because they feel so good about their ability to forecheck and to retrieve and to pressure that for them, like there's no wasted shot because every shot is a shot that they can retrieve later on. Right. Yeah. Whereas other teams like Toronto or, you know, as we get into the Western Conference, but other teams, they're a little bit more mindful because they know that if they shoot from everywhere, they're not going to get the puck back and they're going to waste these possessions. But for Carolina, it's like they don't care about wastage because they don't value having the puck on their sticks as opposed to just running it down.
Yeah. Yeah. Every single shot is just a means to an end. Okay. One final note here, I guess I wanted to give Florida a bit of love for the adjustment they made this postseason where they finally went away from being pretty much the only team that was running three forwards, two defensemen on their power play. Ekblad gets hurt. They wind up making this adjustment and stick with it because it works where they essentially have Barkov as the last man back running the point, they've moved Montour into that shooting spot from the flank. And then they've got Bennett net front, Reinhardt working that bumper really well. And Tkachuk is kind of a facilitator who's working the right flank, but can go down to the goal line as well. And so that's been a source of offense for them this postseason, whereas they weren't really getting anything from it in the regular season. Now they're going up against this Hurricanes team that has the best penalty kill in the league and is a net even so far in that regard in this playoffs, where they've given up three goals against the opposing power plays, but they've also scored three shorthanded goals in that one game themselves. And so it's going to be an uphill battle for the Panthers to keep replicating that success on the power play that they've had so far. And that's a shame, because it's been a bit of a newfound source of offense for them, and it's going to be much tougher to do so in this series.
So I actually like the matchup, Florida's first unit against Carolina's penalty kill. And the reason why I say this is because Carolina is obviously super aggressive in zone. They pressure on the ice when you're set up, which makes it really difficult. But the two things that really work in Florida's benefit is, first of all, you have Barkov up top. So generally speaking, it will be a defenseman playing the point. But because Barkov is a forward, he has better puck skills and he can improvise a little bit better when Carolina is pressuring him near the blue line. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is they have Tkachuk at the goal line. And that goal line position for me is super important, because it, once you get the puck there and you have someone who's able to manufacture close to the net, it opens up a lot of other options, such as Reinhardt in the slot or Montour, you know, at the back post. So if Barkov has the puck up top and Carolina comes in with their pressure, potentially he's able to find a quick little play to go right down to Tkachuk, and then Tkachuk and Reinhardt and Montour could potentially create a 3-on-1 at the net and beat the Hurricanes back to the net. So on those quick low plays, I think Florida can really hurt Carolina.
I love it. All right, well, that's something to watch for. Jack, let's take our break here, and then when we come back, we will jump over to the Western Conference and preview that semifinal matchup. You're listening to the Hockey PDOcast, streaming on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Your number one spot for Flames coverage can be found on Flames Talk with me, Pat Steinberg. Exclusive interviews, trusted insiders, and the latest news. Listen live weekday afternoons at 4 or stream the Flames Talk podcast on demand.
All right, we're back here on the Hockey PDOcast, joined by Jack Hahn. Jack, let's jump to Stars Golden Knights. I'm really excited. I'm excited for the East one, certainly. I think this one, though, is very worthy of being the West final to determine the representative in the Stanley Cup final for the West. We've got an 111-point team that was first in the West in the regular season versus a 108-point team that finished second in goal differential behind just the Bruins. And you know, there's a bunch of off-ice storylines that are interesting. We don't even have to waste our time with those, though, because I think on the ice, there's so much to break down here. And I guess this is the most interesting part of this series for me, is the rush game, because it's two teams that have leveraged it to their advantage significantly this postseason. The Dallas leads the entire league in rush goals by a significant margin so far in these playoffs. And what Vegas did to Edmonton was highly impressive there as well, where they outscored them 6-3 in even strength rush goals, but also just showed how frustrating they can be to play against in the neutral zone. And so I'm really curious to see who can get the better of that matchup in particular in this series.
Yeah. And truth be told, I probably will be more watching more of this series than Florida Carolina.
Well, you can watch both, because it's they're on alternating days, so you're never going to have to pick between one or the other. So the schedule is good. All right. Well, let's tee up the rush game then, and kind of how that sort of seesaw is going to work, and who can get the leg up there, right? I think it's probably more meaningful for Vegas to get a leg up there, because I feel like Dallas can probably create goals in more diverse ways in the offensive zone, whereas if you shut off Vegas's rush attack or kind of dominate them there, they can really struggle, as they did in their two losses to Edmonton in round two. And so I don't know, how do you feel about that one?
It just seems to me that Bruce Cassidy took the same game plan he had with the Boston Bruins and just transposed it to another sort of more veteran roster that fits really well with what he wants to accomplish. When he was in Boston, his team played more of kind of a more cautious forecheck. They use a lot of like a 1-4 in the neutral zone. And so what that does is it forces you to rack up your risk taking in another way, which is if you turn the puck over at the offensive blue line, they can come back and really hurt you off the counterattack, which I think is still kind of what Vegas is trying to do now, right? They have a lot of veteran players. They have three lines that can score. Their D's are a little bit less involved. Like, you know, obviously Shea Theodore is at his best jumping in the rush, but at this point, Pietrangelo he's better kind of staying back and sending outlet passes rather than joining the rush himself. It's a way of playing that works. But as you said, I think Dallas rather is a little bit more well-rounded because they're a little bit more dynamic and having four players in the rush and finding the middle of the ice and manufacturing middle rushes as opposed to just kind of waiting and taking advantage of broken plays.
Well, where Edmonton got in trouble was they would kind of attack more aggressively as a group. And so they would get numbers caught on the wrong side of the puck and they'd get caught deep in the zone. And Vegas is so good, as you mentioned, of kind of creating these little turnovers either in the neutral zone or high in their defensive zone and then immediately going off to the races with a numbers advantage. And I think that's a bit of a lesser concern for Dallas because they don't, in my opinion, attack as much off the rush kind of as a team or a five-man unit. It's a lot of more like individual rushes by a guy like Roope Hintz, for example. And in that case, if that doesn't work or they force a turnover, you will have guys back to be better prepared for it than the Oilers were. What I will say, though, is you're mentioning kind of with the forechecks in the East, how it's imperative to, if you get beaten, haul ass back and make sure that you're getting back in the play. What Vegas does so well, and they exploited Edmonton on numerous occasions, was when they have that numbers advantage, they're so good at delaying a little bit and then hitting the trailer. And so if you do get beat or caught on the wrong side of the puck, if you're Dallas, you have to get back and disrupt that. Otherwise they will pick you apart, even if it's like a 4-on-3. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing how Dallas sort of handles that, because what the Golden Knights did just gave Edmonton fits in that regard.
Yeah, and for Vegas, like, I don't know how much of that is like driven by coaching. It's more like they have players who've been in the league for a while who are really skilled players, and they just sort of, the coaches just sort of lets them cook, right? Because, you know, you mentioned to me, you know, they can either roll out that Stone or Stevenson duo with, you know, someone else, and then they can roll Marchessault and Riley Smith and Carlson, and then you still have Jack Eichel on the bench. So for the thing with Vegas is, for me, it's very much player driven, where they have good players who make plays. And then for Dallas, it's much more kind of team structure driven. But obviously, they've also got some really good players.
Well, what Bruce Cassidy did in round two was he shrewdly used Carlson and Smith and then Stone and Stevenson as duos to great effect in trying to kind of neutralize McDavid at 5-on-5. And then that freed up Eichel, Marchessault, and Barbashev to just eat offensively. And I assume they will do the same here in round three against the Hintz, Pavelski, Robertson line. A lot's been made of Robertson's individual struggles, but when those three have played together this postseason, the Stars are still up 4-0 at 5-on-5, and high danger chances are 17-7. So they've still gotten plenty of looks. And I don't know, I guess we can talk a little bit about Robertson here. I saw you tweet how you think he's hurt. That's a fair guess, because I think most players still playing at this point are probably not 100%. But in this case, I really don't think it's that simple. Like, I think he's had a tough time adjusting to how different a game it is in the playoffs. At the start, he was clearly bothered by Minnesota's physicality. And then against Seattle, I think he struggled with the pace they play with and how much they were taking away his time and space. And he's so reliant on timing and rhythm that kind of threw him off. And so you'd see him try to make these plays where he cuts into the inside and kind of has his three or four staple moves. And whether it was better pre-scouting in a playoff environment or just the different type of way teams are playing, none of that stuff is working. And so I think he just has to adjust and adapt, and I don't think it's him being hurt that's kind of limiting his effectiveness.
Well, I certainly for me he hasn't looked great, but then he's still kind of driving, shots and goals, especially with Pavelski and Hintz. And I think the fact that Pavelski was out for a little bit there, it really hurt him because Pavelski is a guy that draws a lot of defensive pressure to him just because he gets into the middle, he gets in the front of the net, and then he creates a little bit more time on the puck for Robertson. Like the thing that I'm really seeing is, like Auston Matthews under playoff pressure, you don't see Robertson carrying the puck or creating entries at a really high rate, because like Matthews, he's a good skater, but not an elite skater. So he has trouble creating separation. And the thing that both Matthews and Robertson do really well is they use their body and their reach and their hands to win one-on-ones and retrieve pucks and find these continuation plays, but they're not able to really get a step on a guy. And that's kind of what you need to create offense at this time of year.
You do. Another key battleground for me here is the home plate area in the Vegas defensive zone, because one adjustment, you kind of mentioned Bruce Cassidy's system and what he's brought in and how much of it is him versus how much it is the players. We can trace a very clear change in the way they play defensively under him compared to what they did under Pete DeBoer. And in particular, they've been so good this season at shutting off access to that middle of the ice. They basically just let you take shots from the edges of the offensive zone, from the points, and are comfortable with that and make life easier on their goalies. And that's why all of these kind of lesser known names in net for them have had the numbers they've had this season. Now, Dallas, in my opinion, might be right there as the best team in the league at making little passes to go from the outside of the zone to the inside of the zone and create chances from that home plate area. And that extends from their first line to their third line. But they're also very good at taking those point shots that Vegas will allow them, and then setting up layers of traffic in front of the goalie, and basically having multiple tip options for their defenseman to shoot at with a very kind of designed game plan to do so. And it's not random at all. It's a very coherent game plan on their part. And so, in that case, I'm very curious to see whether they're going to be able to break into the home plate area, and then if they can't, whether they can still utilize those point shots to still give Vegas's defense trouble, because those are looks they will get throughout the series.
Personally, I'm a fan of how Dallas moves the puck in the O zone. They'll go to a more traditional kind of behind the net, or like a three player down low cycle, or they can use a 2-3. They can attack downhill. They've got a lot of weapons, and I really love how they added players such as Dodonov at the trade deadline to give him a little bit more offense, kind of in that middle of the lineup. I think Wyatt Johnson's been massive because he's really revitalized Jamie Benn. And Jamie Benn, that gets the puck on a regular basis down low, he can be really hard to handle. And Johnston, we saw that highlight reel goal he scored on the backhand in Game 7. But he's kind of that transition player that can really help, whether it's Jamie Benn, whether it's Tyler Seguin, or like kind of those players who are in the middle of that lineup really elevate. And that's kind of how Vegas beat Edmonton as well, right? Because Edmonton's top six was really humming. Their best players played great. But then, their third line was sort of kind of a sore spot for them, right? Because after you've loaded up McDavid and Draisaitl, obviously you got Nugent-Hopkins and Evander Kane. But after that, it's like, if you have Jack Eichel coming out on the third wave, who's he playing against, right?
Well, he's probably playing against Miro Heiskanen because he's going to be out there for over half the game. So that certainly helps, right? I think he played over 30 minutes in 3 of 6 games against the Kraken that he was healthy in. For him, I made this note to you in kind of our preparation of what we wanted to talk about. His rush defense is going to be very valuable in this series because it's just been exquisite. Like, he's right up there with the best players in the league at angling you off and turning what looks like a threat into a very harmless play. And so when I mentioned some of those, three on twos or odd man rushes that Vegas likes to create, he's going to buy his players more time to get back in the play because of how good he is at slowing guys down. One issue he's had in the past couple of games, adjusting to playing with that fishbowl he's wearing now to protect his face, is he's clearly like struggling handling the puck, especially when it's close to his feet and when he can't really get the same like eye line on it and doesn't have a good feel for it. And I'm very curious to see like how aggressively Vegas goes after him and whether they can do a better job than Seattle did of capitalizing on those mistakes he makes on these breakouts, or whether he just gets more comfortable playing with it and is able to kind of eliminate some of those mistakes that he was making in the past couple games.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe he takes the fishbowl off for game one. Maybe he's,
I don't
he's
know.
Added
that
up
was a
days.
Pretty that was a pretty gruesome injury. His face was pretty banged up, so I would be worried about him getting hit in the face again. Not even by a puck, but just by like a hit or something, or a high stick. Like I'd be worried about that if I were him.
Yeah, it's certainly. But I know how players hate playing with a fishbowl, because first of all, you have the fogging, right? Second of all, when the puck is at your feet, the fact that you're looking through a piece of plastic, it really distorts your vision and you don't see it as well. And third, it's just a feeling that like you don't really feel like you have as good peripheral vision as without the fishbowl. So I'm sure if he feels like he's like 80 or 90%, he's going to take it off.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something to watch for. Do you want to, you kind of mentioned Wyatt Johnson there. I've talked about him a lot on this show over the past couple of weeks. I don't necessarily have anything you'd add there, but I do think he is a very key X factor in this series, because I've been tracking all these games and he's good for about three or four really good scoring chances per game. And he's one of the best players in the league already at getting kind of lost in that home plate area and then popping up and getting a chance out of it. And so I'm curious to see whether he can keep that going. And he scored the three goals against the Kraken, including the big one in game seven. That was just an awesome display of skill. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him score a bunch more in this series and potentially even lead the series in goal scoring, because he gets that many quality looks. So we could talk about him. And I also kind of want to talk a little bit about Thomas Harley, because when you're thinking of X factors, I feel like his growing role and what he showed in particular in round two, I think could be a huge game changer for the Stars team.
Well, I mean, how good of a job has Dallas done with their kind of their late first or second round picks, right? Like you have Johnston, you have Harley, Woupé Hintz, you know, Jason Robertson, like, right? Like that's essentially the young core of their team. And they were built using draft picks that typically don't turn into premium players.
And they're going to be adding Logan Stankoven and Maverick Bourque. Yeah, I mean, they've done a phenomenal job and they deserve credit for it. And that's why they've been able to, even with some inefficient spending on their cap sheet, been able to stay successful and kind of turn this thing around with a new wave of this team. You know, Harley had the 7 5-on-5 points against the Kraken for the playoffs. With him on the ice at 5-on-5, the Stars are controlling 66% of the high danger chances. And the point that I wanted to make, I made on a previous show, but I want to hammer it here as well, is he's only played about 20% of his 5-on-5 minutes with the Hintz line. And that's because they generally just play kind of match up top pair with top line. And that's how it works. But I don't want him playing with the fourth line more than he plays with the top line, because his skill set is so additive offensively in terms of being so good at shooting from the point and looking for those sticks, which Dallas utilizes, and getting involved in the rush, which are kind of their two main forms of offense. And he's so additive in that regard that I want to see Pete DeBoer make the adjustment of getting him on the ice with those guys as much as he can, and potentially even for some offensive zone faceoffs with a Miro, and just kind of scrapping that Miro Suter pairing when he can situationally.
Yeah, so I don't disagree with that, because he's such a smart player and like he plays a really deliberate, methodical game despite being a bigger guy. Like you watch him, you know, he's what, like 6'4", 6'5". Like you think he's a bruiser and he's someone who really just kind of hammers the puck and plays really simple. But no, like he makes a lot of these little plays. He's really thoughtful with the puck. And I remember scouting him when he was in his draft year in the OHL. And in terms of the size he had at the reach, the puck skills, you know, he had pretty good production relative to his age. The only kind of question mark and the reason why he wasn't maybe a top 10 pick was just because it seemed like he preferred a slower, more methodical pace. He wasn't the kind of guy who would kind of take the puck himself and really, you know, increase the tempo of the game. He's a guy that kind of just sorts of kind of massages the play as opposed to really drive it. So I don't know, like it seems like he's been a good fit, but again, he's not the same kind of player as Heiskanen and who can really kind of skate the whole rink
Of
and
course.
really carry play that way. But again, like I really like his role in Dallas's kind of overall scheme, and I really like him with the second and third line. So I don't think he's being underutilized all that much. I think he's kind of in a right spot to succeed right now, but certainly, going forward, he's still young. He's going to get better. I think he can become a more kind of dominant part of Dallas's overall strategy.
Well, it's interesting to hear you note that. I think probably what happened there from a scouting perspective as well was I think guys sometimes get docked for when they look a certain way and you expect them to play accordingly and then they play differently, even if it's more effective. It's still kind of just it kind of tricks you a little bit because you're like, oh, I expected him to play this certain way and he's not doing what I expected. And so he gets bumped down people's boards a little bit. And I think that's probably what happened there. But yeah, he's been awesome and I'm very curious to see if he can keep this going, keep playing this well, and keep providing these results for Dallas. All right, Jack, we got to get out of here. We did our 50 minutes on these two series. This was a blast. Hopefully the listeners are more prepared for these matchups now than they were previously. I will let you on the way out, plug some stuff, and let the listeners know where they can check out some of your work.
Okay, so as usual, the best place to find my work is on Twitter, JHANHKY. If you're a fan from a more traditional NHL market and you haven't seen any of these four teams play at all during the regular season, I suggest you pick up a copy of my Hockey Tactics 2023 ebook. What I've done is I've diagrammed all of these teams' systems so that you can be the smartest guy or gal in the room whenever you're watching hockey with your buddies.
All right, buddy. Highly recommend that. And thank you for taking the time. This was a blast. Looking forward to the series finally starting. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode of the Hockey PDO Cast, as always, streaming on the Sportsnet Radio Network.